Maria Elena Sanchez hung naked by her wrists from the ceiling of the bedroom. Although bruised and contused here and there from rough handling and being tied, she was alive, unmutilated, and even unraped. Her captors had even placed a flowered metal bowl beneath her feet in case she leaked from time to time. Despite not having slept for 2 days and nights, she was wide awake, because it was looking as if her intact condition was subject to change any moment now. A huge, hideous mutie ran the clipped back of the foot-long bowie knife blade down a bare thigh. The curve of the metal seemed to fit by nature against the smooth, creamy skin. This mutie wasn't El Cabron. El Cabron was huge, sure enough, a good 350 pounds of him propped on a brass bed, bare from the waist up. And he was unsightly enough, with scabs and seeping pustules all over his broad face and hairy body. But El Cabron was nowhere near so large, nor so hideous, as the mutie now caressing Maria Elena's shrinking face with fine forged steel.
Ho says he's tired of waiting.
The mutie standing next to the one with the knife was growing impatient, watching his comrade Hole playing with the girl. This one wasn't near as huge, scarcely 4 feet tall.
Ho says he wants some fun now.
El Cabron glared with little bloodshot piggy eyes. His cheeks puffed out either side of the extravagant mustache that grew down the sides of his mouth to about his second chin. They were so fuzzed with coarse grizzled stubble, they looked like blowfish bellies.
I give the orders here, skis. Remember that. Shut your hole, Hole.
The captive squeezed her eyes shut as the awful stench rolled up out of the depths of Hole and over her like a chem storm off the plains. Hole was really huge, maybe 7 feet tall, maybe 500 pounds. He had no visible eyes, nose, or ears. Just a huge reddish cavern in place of a face, fringed with scalloped yellow flesh that reminded the girl of toothless gums. But he didn't seem to miss much and got around well enough to be El Cabron's chief enforcer. And he seemed to be on the brink of staging a palace coup.
We can't damage the merchandise. Just give it a day or two until her father caves. Then we can get all the sweet thing we want.
Hole is not big on deferred gratification.
What the fuck?
Not move.
The figure standing there seemed to fit right in with the others. A slim youth with a shockingly scarred face, the color of a sheet of paper, and ruby eyes blazing above the sights of a gigantic silver revolver. He seemed to be grinning with pleasure, but it might have been just the way a healed knife cut pulled up the corner of his mouth.
Back away from Gael.
Outside, a blaster yammered on full automatic. At the sound of the mutie colliding with Carnes, Brassard spun and lit off half of a 30-round magazine from his M16. Right into Carnes' back. Not all the rounds hit the private. None of them hit the mutie, who turned and fled. Carnes went right down. He wasn't dead, though, even with a huge swatch of his blood sprayed all over the side of the shed and more squirting out of a dozen holes. He kicked and thrashed. Shots cracked from somewhere. Brassard fired off the rest of his mag into the wooded slope behind the Tate house. Then he dropped the mag, slammed in a new one, and grabbed Mickles by the sleeve.
Come on! We gotta get out of here!
Holy shit!
Muties came pouring out of the buildings. Some staggered, some carried blasters, which they fired enthusiastically, as if they could compensate for a lack of visible targets that way. Mickles stood as if he'd put down roots. Appropriately, he was getting a little green in the face.
But Carnes!
He's had it! If we don't get out of here, we'll join him!
But the kid...
Fuck him! He's mutie meat now! If we can make it back to the wagon, we have a chance, but we got to move!
As if on cue, a mutie appeared around the end of a lump of weeds and rust that had once upon a time been a tractor, 30 yards away at the end of another outbuilding. The mutie raised a long blaster and shot at them.
Oh, shit!
Mickles bolted right past his corporal and into the woods, heading for the wag parked on the far side of the hill to safety. Brassard followed, blazing off his new mag at the mutie for good measure as he ran. More muties poured around the corner of the shed they'd just fled and began to kick the still-thrashing Carnes and beat him with farm implements and rocks as others fired after the fugitives.
What?
The sound of blaster fire momentarily distracted Jack. The hunchback mutie, Skeez, acted at once. With rattlesnake speed, he snatched up a wooden chair and hurled it at the youth. Jack fired at the motion. The impact and recoil knocked the big revolver from his hand. Hole held out his arms to either side, one gnarled hand brandishing the knife. The monstrous mutie seemed more a walking nightmare than a flesh and blood horror. Jack was superstitious, but he wasn't easily awed. He also knew an opportunity when he saw one. He sprinted straight at the roaring mutie. Halfway across the floor, he launched himself into the air, coiling his legs, and then planting a perfect dropkick against Hole's chest. The impact of Jack's slight body was pitifully insufficient to damage the gigantic mutie. He'd have been hard-pressed to hurt him even if he was fired out of a blaster, but it was just enough to overbalance him. Hole smashed the back of his hand against the wall and lost the bowie knife as he fell right out the window. Jack rebounded off his chest and landed in a crouch in the center of the floor. Squeeze uttered a squeak of terror and scuttled for the fallen buoy. As he reached for it, a throwing knife seemed to sprout from the back of his hand. He held up the wounded member in horror as blood ran down his arm. Then he dashed out of the room. At this point, El Cabron leapt to his feet with surprising agility. His belly, covered in scabs and black hair, slogged ponderously back and forth and up and down with an almost tidal motion.
You got balls, Jodido, but maybe not so much brains. I'm 3 times your size and I ain't standing by no window.
As El Cabron spoke, he was reaching behind his enormous back to the waistband of his dungarees. Jack drew the short, knurled aluminum rod from his belt.
That little stick ain't gonna do you no good, Whitey.
El Cabron whipped his hand around. In it was a truly enormous pistol, a Taurus Raging Bull double-action revolver in .454 Casull caliber, chromed like a gaudy house witch ball. Even as the revolver rose, Jack flicked his wrist. 4 feet of aluminum tipped with a slim steel head snapped from the baton-like handle. El Cabron's eyes widened. Jack pivoted toward him, getting a two-handed grip on the spear. The butt smashed the thumb of the mutie's gun hand. El Cabron dropped the piece. Jack leaned back, ducking beneath the potent but clumsy swipe of the mutie chieftain's left arm. Then he thrust the spear hard between El Cabron's flabby, scabby breasts.
Motherfucker!
The man sat down hard on the edge of the bed. Jack let go of the spear and danced back out of range. The mutie wrapped a huge hand around the haft of the spear and pulled. Pain made his eyes cross and his face turned blue beneath its pustules. The spear popped out. El Cabron's eyes blazed with triumph as he brandished it.
Not the best you can do, Horto.
Nope. Daddy's. And Dad. And Dad.
Enough!
What?
I survived a lot, but if you shoot that damn thing again, my head will implode.
Jack lowered the blaster, looking almost sheepish. He stuck it in his waistband, where it threatened to pull down his pants. He held his hands behind his legs and hoped she wouldn't see him shaking them to alleviate the stinging in his palms. He went to the buoy and picked it up.
Nice staff.
Using the chair Skeez had hurled at him, he stood on tiptoe and cut through the captive girl's bonds. Unfortunately, he lacked the strength to hold up her weight.
Thanks for rescuing me.
No problem.
Would you please take your hand off my breast and cut my wrists free? I'll be lucky if my hands don't swell up.
Right.
Jack snatched his hand away as if her skin had turned red hot. He still had hold of the buoy, miraculously, and hadn't sliced either one of them in the fall. He quickly freed her. She sat up and began massaging her legs vigorously.
Lord, it feels like my skin's full of red ants. I'm going to have to keep going on adrenaline and hope that's enough.
Jack had picked himself up and secured his python. He moved swiftly to the door and peered out. There was no sign of activity inside the house, although there was a mighty commotion going on outside.
There are horses. If we can get to them, we have a chance of getting clear.
She was a remarkably cool one, Jack had to admit. He went to her and helped her to her feet. She started to sag, gritted her teeth, and straightened up.
Give me that fat bastard's pistol.
Phew, no way.
I can shoot a blaster.
Not that one.
He frowned, then reversed the python in his hand and proffered it to her. Volume of fire might just make a difference to their breakout chances.
Don't drop.
I'll try to keep a better hold of it than you did. Now let's get out of here.
Funny.
I thought so.